Three, two, one.
All right.
Cool.
Cool.
All right. I'm going to drink some water, and we'll jump in. Okay. Okay. And then we'll give it, like, 5 seconds. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Artificial Talk. I'm your host, Tristan, and with me today I have my co-host...
Patrick.
All right, and we have a lot of topics to get through, so we're just going to jump right into it. First things first, I think we have the biggest event of the beginning of this year, the Apple event. It's so funny to me, just as like a side note, when the Apple event happens, everything else just kind of doesn't matter in that moment. Like, there is no other event in tech.
Yeah, it's not even that moment. It's for like the next 2 weeks. There's nothing that happens. It's just the Apple event. Like, it's over and done with. It's been 2 weeks. But no. Nothing's happening because the Apple event happened. We gotta focus on that. Which, I mean, fair enough. A lot of stuff happens in that.
And what's funny about this event is this is not even the iPhone event. This isn't the big Apple event. Like, I would say the iPhone event is like Apple's, like, that is the crown jewel event. This event is the iPads and Macs, and I all you iPad and Mac people, not trying to call you out. I actually love the iPad. Clearly, we are the second citizens to Apple, though.
Okay, but this event was going to be big regardless because of what we knew beforehand. I'm not surprised they kind of took the spotlight away this hard.
That's true. And to kind of start it off, I'm just going to say M1. Yep. Apple decided the M1 should go in literally every device that wasn't the phone. Oh, and the Apple TV. We'll come back to the Apple TV because I think it's the most neglected Apple product, if we're going to be honest. Like, it's weird. We'll come back around to that, though. But I think the big thing is you have iMacs, you've got iPads, and you've got, like, AirTags. And all of those, except for the AirTags, have the M1, which is... Okay.
Yeah.
The iMac having the M1, the design, can I just say I don't like the front? Like, white bezels and big chin still. We didn't move away from that for some reason. But all right. Fine, Apple. It looks like an iMac, which is totally fine. It has the M1, which makes it even faster, and it's super thin. Like, Patrick, think about this for a second. This iMac is as thin as the original iPhone. Actually, it's thinner than the original iPhone. Think about that.
Sheesh.
And it has a magnetic plug, if you're into that.
I mean, magnets are always nice.
That's true. There's a lot of people that hate the magnetic plug. I don't hate it.
I mean,
granted,
isn't that how it used to be? Isn't that how it used to be on older Macs? Or like MacBooks, sorry, not Macs.
So on older Macs, but the iMac actually has never had a metal plug. The idea with the MagSafe connector on MacBooks is that, you know, somebody at the coffee shop walks over your cord that's plugged into the wall and then it pulls out before it pulls your whole computer off the desk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, the iMac doesn't move, though. And theoretically, the plug is behind a desk or it's somewhere where you're not going to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are like, well, why did they include a magnetic plug on a desktop computer that never moves? And it was just... It looks cool, though. I agree with you. It just sounds cool. Magnets everywhere.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if I could get a magnetic plug for my computer, I'd probably do that. I mean, just for the heck of it. I mean, laptop, not computer. I'm still a little confused on the computer part of this whole thing.
I mean, the old saying is, what is a computer? And we saw Tim Cook in his, when he climbed the Apple University building, broke into Apple, and then stole the M1 out of a MacBook Air and put it into an iPad. Okay. Now, the iMac, it's a computer. You've seen the new MacBooks. It's going to be really fast. It's going to be really thin. It's going to be really quiet. All that sort of thing. I don't think we really need to go into... I mean, Dolby Atmos speakers, because downward firing speakers are going to be fine, honestly. Like, the thing with the iMac is it's not big. I'm surprised they released a new one, But I don't think this is the computer everyone's going to say, oh, this is, like, you know, amazing. Because I don't think this computer... I think this is just supposed to replace the iMac. I think that's all it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to have everything start at the same time so they can update everything at the same time. Because it's also a hardware change, and a very significant one at that.
Yes.
So it makes sense that they're trying to do that now. And maybe the magnetic plug is to... I'm not sure if it's the same one as the MacBook. I'm assuming not. But if it is...
It's supposed to be a lot stronger, I think.
Okay. Because if it's the same type of plug, then it would make sense that they're trying to unify everything. But it's, you know, not, makes... so... I don't think it works like that.
And the MacBooks don't have MagSafe anymore.
Yeah.
So... But either way, the point being, I don't think the iMac was the star of this event. I think the iPad was.
Definitely.
And, okay. Now, all right, Patrick. I think you're the only one of us who doesn't have an iPad.
I mean, I have an iPad mini.
Oh.
It's just dead because I need to restart it, but I also don't want to restart it because you can't take apps off of the iPad as of right now. Until, you know, the MacBook with the M1s come out, and then hopefully you can actually take apps off of iPads and back them up, rather than just praying that I can figure out how to re-download it.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so, and you hit on a real good point there. We have iPads with the same chip that a Mac has.
Yeah.
But there is... So, alright. I'm gonna say something. The iPad is not limited by hardware. In fact, it has never been limited by hardware. I actually can't think of a time the iPad was, quote-unquote, too slow to be an iPad, right? Correct me if I'm wrong there.
I mean, you can definitely put an iPad under a lot of pressure. But sure. I don't think it's hardware because it never feels like it's overheating. It never feels like anything's going wrong. If anything, I feel like it's software, right? Like, it's being bottlenecked.
You pretty much hit on the nail on the head where I was going with this. I think iPadOS has always been the problem with that. And actually, even before iPadOS, iOS. And if we're going to just be straight, iPadOS is kind of just a toned-down version of iOS. And it's also bad. Yeah.
It's like, it's the iPad has the capabilities of being a computer. But they put the software of a phone onto it. And so it just straight up doesn't work.
Okay. I'm not going to say it doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't work as good as it should be working.
My biggest issues with iPadOS are actually the fact that, one, it doesn't have external display support, which, you know, the iPad display is great, and especially the new one with the mini LED and all that stuff, it looks great. But what if you need a screen that's bigger than 13 inches? What are you supposed to do? Well, the iPad can't go to an external display, so you're kind of stuck. So
yeah, I mean, like, they don't really have any way for you to get an output out of the iPad anyways, really.
No. It supports Thunderbolt now.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, the new iPad Pro, both of them, support Thunderbolt.
So what you're saying is that there should, in theory, be external monitor support, but there just isn't.
Well, if you plug in an iPad right now, even a older iPad, what happens is it displays to the aspect ratio of the iPad. So with your mini, for example, I forget the resolution of the iPad mini, but if you were to plug that into an external display, theoretically, it'll output the size of your mini's display onto a massive monitor and won't match up at all because it's copying the exact ratio. It can only do mirroring, essentially.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not good.
No, it's not. Even if you have the 13-inch iPad Pro, if you put that on an external display, imagine you have, like, let's say you have a 32-inch display, for example. Like, you got this massive display, a lot of screen real estate, you plug your Windows computer in or your Mac, and it just covers the whole display. Your iPad's going to cover, like, maybe the middle of it. Like, call it, like, you know, whatever diagonally 13 inches looks like on your screen, that's the amount it'll cover and nothing more.
Yeah, and that's just a massive pain, dude.
Right. That's my first thing. And second thing is the file manager on iPadOS is just bad. It is... Okay. Consider this for a second. Let's say you want to move a file from your iPad, like on your iPad storage, to, let's say, Google Drive, OneDrive, or even... Let's even throw iCloud Drive in there. And that's the best one of all of them. when you move this file, your expectation is that it should just automatically upload to that storage, right? That cloud storage.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening is, first of all, you throw it in and you hope that it doesn't disappear. Because occasionally iPadOS forgets that you threw a file somewhere and it just like disappears into the ether, I assume. I don't know where it goes. And then to actually get it to sync, you have to then go and open the app for files to tell the app to upload it, assuming it actually did that. And any file that is over a certain amount, a certain size, I actually can't tell because the files I tend to work with tend to be really large, but above a certain size, it simply just won't work. It'll just break. It doesn't know what to do with that file. How has this not been fixed yet?
I mean, I don't think Apple views the iPad as a legitimate device for doing any serious work on, and I think that's the issue that they just had with it. Is they just don't take it seriously enough. Like,
but, okay, I would agree with you. Let's say, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. I'd 100% agree with you. But my issue is they brought, like, a few years ago, they actually brought Microsoft on this Apple stage to say that Word works great on the iPad for productivity. So, What's the take here?
Maybe they're just not going... I still don't think they're pushing for it to be like a replacement for a laptop, and that's an issue. And since they're not technically, it's not technically a laptop replacement, it's a tablet replacement. They're not trying to compete with laptops for some reason, even though they easily could. Well, I mean, they have MacBooks, so maybe that's the reason why. But regardless, I'm just a little, I think they're just a little confused on what they want. And I think they're undervaluing the iPad. Like, I think they think their competitors are the Android tablets, which are completely different, considering that those, you cannot use it to replace a decent chunk of your workflow. Like, ever. They're just not, there's just no way.
So that's my problem, though. A few things. Apple... last generation with their chip in the iPad before the M1 compared the iPad to Windows PCs. And they were like, it's faster than 99% of Windows PCs.
Yeah.
That was a marketing term they coined and used. So they're comparing the speed. And not only that, now they have the Magic Keyboard. Granted, I know, $300, $350. It's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get the iPad and you get the Magic Keyboard, you're sitting somewhere around... let's call it $1,400 or so. Which, if you do the price comparison to a Windows PC of similar caliber, let's say a Dell XPS 13, an HP Spectre, you could even go Surface laptop, your pricing's actually pretty on point. Now, the only device I will say that is, for some reason, lower is actually the MacBook Air. The MacBook Air is actually cheaper than an iPad Pro with the whole kit. In fact, the MacBook Pro is actually also lower than the iPad Pro. But at the same time, the marketing for those devices, and I had this conversation with Louis a few podcast episodes ago. One of the conversations we had was actually, well, I think Apple's trying to kill the Mac for normal consumers. And I think the iPad is supposed to be for the consumer and the Mac is going to be for pros. So things like the 16-inch MacBook Pro will still exist. Things like your iMac Pro, which they haven't updated in a while. So I query whether they're going to keep that branding around. But I think things like the iMac and the iPad are consumer and everything else sort of goes into the professional field, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel the same way, yeah. I feel like they're trying to push the Macs in the MacBooks way, way, way more towards, like, quote-unquote pro users. Although I think the Macs, like the actual desktops, will be pushed more towards developers now, if that makes sense. Like, the iPad is supposed to be for a casual consumer, the MacBooks are supposed to be for someone who's a little bit more advanced, and then developers are supposed to use the Mac for some reason. Which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me why they would do that, but yeah, they might be trying to kill off the Mac for just regular consumers.
Now, the last thing I'm going to bring up about the iPad, then we'll move on, is the fact that it has the M1 chip inside of it. And why I'm going to bring this up, and why it's significant, is because Apple could have actually branded the chip inside the iPad anything they wanted. And here's an example I'm going to throw at you. If you looked at the old iPad Pro from 2020, it had the A12Z in it, right? Which was, you know, Apple markets their chips as the A series and now the M series.
Yeah.
And of course, they also have their H and W series, but we're just going to talk about the A and M here. If they had branded the iPad Pro this year with an A14X, as they had done in previous years, I actually wouldn't have much issue with still calling it an iPad. But Apple went out of their way to call the chip in this new iPad the M1 chip.
Mm-hmm.
And the M1 chip is the same one in Macs, in the iMac. So I think part of my problem is, if the iPad Pro is not supposed to be a laptop, then why brand the chip inside as the same chip you have in your laptops? Why does it not have the capacity to do coding? Why does it not have the capacity to even something like Logic Pro, which, or Final Cut, which are Apple's own products, can't run on the iPad Pro with the M1 chip, the same one inside of the Mac? And that's the part that's confusing to me. Maybe WWDC will see an answer for that, but in the moment, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me, looking at it as a device that potentially should and could replace your laptop.
Mm-hmm. I think they're working towards that at least, like, especially since they're all coming out with the same hardware, or at least the same processing unit. I highly, highly doubt that Apple's going to pull punches for the iPad and not allow any compatibility between apps developed for MacBooks and iMacs to be on the iPad. And honestly, if Apple doesn't do it, I can definitely see the community trying to, like, figure out a way to, like, hack something in for that, because it just makes zero sense as to why you wouldn't be able to do that. I mean, for crying out loud, someone got Ruby on Rails to run on the Switch. Like, there's really no excuse for coding to be on the iPad at this point in time. But I'm not sure if you can get something like Final Cut on there, just because you need a lot of, like, graphics powers and stuff like that to get video rendering at a decent rate.
Well, the MacBook Air could run Final Cut with no issue, with the M1 chip, and no fan.
Okay, so what you're telling me is there's no excuse.
Yes, there is no excuse. I'm in agreement. Somebody is going to break this at some point to actually get it to run the things that they want.
Yes.
My point being, I don't understand why Apple hasn't done that.
It's just Apple. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes there's a decent idea staring them in the face and they just say no.
I mean, maybe we'll see something WWDC. I'm going to move on because this topic sort of enrages me as a person who actually loves the iPad. Let's move on to AirTags, because I think they're, for some reason, they're also the most, like, comprehensive Apple product. Can I just say that off the top of this? For one, the one exception being they have a replaceable battery, which I'm happy for.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, I think, is happy for. So, I mean, okay, AirTags are basically Bluetooth trackers, not Tile, so we don't call them Tiles. They're AirTags. What's really interesting about AirTags, though, and something I think that Tile is sort of salty on, and maybe rightly so, honestly, is the fact that AirTags don't use an app. They use every Apple device that currently exists on the planet and is up to date with iOS 14.5.
Hmm.
Which is over a billion iPhones, by the way.
Yeah, because Apple is, like, literally the leading phone producer.
Right. So, well, here in the US, everywhere else in the world, it's a lot of Android. But even then, it's hard to say that there's not going to be one person with an iPhone in, like, you know, any part of the world, essentially. So that means, theoretically, you could lose an AirTag, something with it like your keys, or, oh, by the way, there is no keychain thing on the AirTag. You actually have to buy an accessory to attach it to a keychain. That's the most Apple part of this whole product. The accessories cost as much as the AirTag themselves. Like, the AirTags are reasonably priced. Okay, Patrick, how much do you think an AirTag cost?
Isn't it like, I thought it was like around $10 for, like, one.
Oh, no, no, no. That you're this is Apple.
Oh. Okay, so maybe I'm putting my prices too low then. I guess something more reasonable would be around $30 then.
Okay, you're actually right on point. Apple's AirTags cost $30.
Oh, there we go.
Which, their competitor, Tile, is actually about the same. Actually, a little more expensive in a lot of cases.
Are they actually? I thought they were cheaper.
No, no, no. Tile charges about the same amount for an AirTag.
Wow.
And, like, you know, their more advanced ones cost even more money. The ones that are, like, super waterproof sealed and all that. And the AirTag is, it's IP67. Straight from the bat. And with a replaceable battery, which Patrick and I were talking before the podcast started. Like, Tile didn't actually replace the battery until the most recent models. So a lot of times your Tile died and you just sort of threw it away, essentially.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, like, maybe there's a way you can open it up and swap out the battery, but, like, that's also not really possible.
No. And you'd ruin the waterproofing ceiling and all that sort of thing.
It's just a mess. It's just a mess. Like, why would you? No. And,
like,
I mean, they changed it with the newer ones, right? Some of the newer ones have replaceable batteries, but if you have one of the old ones, you're just gone. You're just done-zoed.
Throw it away. It's trash now. Which, you know, I'm happy Apple chose a replaceable battery. That's something that I wouldn't have expected from them, but I'm happy they took that route.
Yeah.
But I think the most interesting part of AirTag is they made it so that, you know, people can't just track you with it, though.
Yeah, right.
Like, the idea, so, like, they have all these features built in. If an AirTag is, like, slipped into your bag, for example, and you're walking around, and the owner of that AirTag isn't near you anymore because they're just trying to track you, your phone, if you have an iPhone, to be clear, not an Android phone, but Android phones aren't telling the location of AirTags anyways, you know, it basically means that your phone will be like, hey, just so you know, this AirTag is following you, and it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can disable it straight from your phone. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, I mean, AirTag is just a Bluetooth tracker, is basically all it is. And the thing is, and I know Tile was actually suing Apple in Europe over anti-competitive things. One of the things they brought up very specifically was, well, two things, the Find My Network and the ultra wideband chip in the iPhone itself. Apple's response to one was just to open up the Find My Network for anybody to use, which, query whether that's a thing that, you know, was helpful to Tile. But the second one is actually a little bit interesting. Okay, so Patrick, how much do you know about ultra-wideband chips and phones?
Pretty much nothing. I don't really look into it.
Okay, cool. So, just give, like, a really broad explanation. An ultra-wideband chip is sort of like a, it's a super accurate, I don't want to call it a Bluetooth chip. It's not technically Bluetooth, but it instead, like, okay, so Bluetooth, for example, when you have it on your phone, it can go as far as to estimate distance between you and an object with Bluetooth on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of Bluetooth. Ultra wideband sort of does the opposite. Well, not the opposite. Instead of just kind of shooting out a signal everywhere and getting a rough approximation of where something is, ultra wideband actually is directional, meaning it can actually figure out what direction an object is in and even, you know, show like an AR visualization of where the object is.
Mm.
So just imagine, like, you know, you've got your AirTag, for example, and you threw it into like a pile of stuff, you know, the old haystack and needle type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, with your phone, you could use your phone to look for this AirTag and just scan over this pile, and then you'd be able to see exactly where, or not exactly, roughly where this AirTag is in the pile.
Mm.
Pretty impressive tech. Now, both Apple and Google, there are phones out there, Android and Apple, that have ultra-wideband in them, the ultra-wideband chip. And neither of these companies have opened up this chip to developers. Now, just take a guess on why they haven't widely made this available for developers.
It's probably because they don't want it getting, like, security issued. issued, right? Like, people go in and they try to, like, white hat hack. They don't want people doing that and figuring out what's wrong with it.
You're on the right path. The base issue is ultra-wideband chips actually can talk to each other.
Mm.
So imagine being able to find, you know, somebody using their phone's ultra-wideband chip communicating with your ultra-wideband chip. And just being able to see, like, everybody's phones.
Mm. Yeah, that would be a pretty bad issue, big issue, yeah.
Yeah, so, and to be clear, I understand why Tile would be angry about this. Obviously, the AirTag has an advantage because, well, the AirTags can do it, and Tile can't. But there are some privacy implications that do probably need to be talked about, allowing everyone to access ultra-wideband chips. So, that's interesting. We've been on the Apple event for quite a bit. Apple TV came out. It can, you can adjust your TV, your Apple TV's color temperature using your phone camera if you have an iPhone. That's kind of neat. It has A12 in it. It costs the same amount of money. I really don't have much to say about the Apple TV here. Do you have anything you wanted to throw on top of that?
I mean, it's a new Apple TV. There's not a whole lot new happening with it.
The remote's not garbage anymore. It has buttons now.
That's true.
That's big. Anyways, moving on. iOS 14.5. Facebook's really mad about that update. Yeah, I don't really... I honestly don't have too much to say about this one. This has been a long time coming. I think we've all seen it coming. Basically, the iPhone will now ask you if you want to allow apps to track you across other apps. That's kind of big. It's a bigger conversation than I think we can have here. It could actually take up the rest of this podcast episode. So maybe if we have time at the end, we'll come back around to the implications of that.
Yeah.
But just know Facebook's really mad. They took out, you know, ads in newspapers in like Europe. It was really funny. Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go ahead. Let's move on. Let's go to, I'm thinking, Samsung event, they had some laptops come out. They pre-announced the RTX 3050 Ti. They also have their own version of AirTags now. Yeah. If you've never used SmartThings by Samsung, it's actually not too bad. I can't really complain. If you have a microwave, yeah, if you put a microwave in the middle of nowhere, SmartThings actually will tell you where the microwave is.
Huh. Interesting.
I don't know who's... Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know who's stealing your microwave and then you have to track it down using, you know, SmartThings devices, but you can do that if you really need to.
Hmm.
What's kind of big about this one, honestly, so Samsung makes laptops. They're not even bad laptops. I'm not going to say that. I think the problem with Samsung laptops is they're kind of generic, and that's always been the issue with them.
They really are, like... I had a roommate who had a Samsung laptop for a time, and whenever I saw it, I always forgot it was a Samsung because it's super generic looking, and then I'd always be like, huh, wasn't that Samsung? And then I'd be like, no, there's no way, it's super, it was just like really generic looking, turned it on, you couldn't, I don't know, man, it just didn't look like it was worth the money he paid for it.
Yeah, and I mean, so Samsung makes a lot of phones, and their phone business is the largest in the world by
far.
Yeah,
like,
there's not a...
their phones are great. The laptop just did not hold up to that standard.
I feel like just Samsung doesn't care about laptops. Like, okay, actually, and this was a few weeks back at this point, but LG jumped out of the phone business, and in a weird way, they had the opposite problem of Samsung, where all their phones were too all over the place.
Yeah.
So, which is, honestly speaking, just as a quick summary of that, LG basically cut their phone business. They're not doing phones anymore. And honestly, I'm kind of sad about it because I think LG was one of the few phone manufacturers that was doing crazy things with phones.
Yeah, they were. And it's a little disappointing to see them gone, but, like... I guess if they weren't making money from any of that stuff, which it's probably pretty clear they weren't if they decided to just get out of the phone business, like, Yeah, no. It's very disappointing, but they're a company
Yeah.
first and foremost.
Now, the big headline news of the Samsung event, like, again, it's not an Apple event. It didn't take up all the headlines for more than like a day. But they did pre-announce the RTX 3050 Ti, which NVIDIA has never talked about. Like, nobody has talked about. And then Samsung just announced it out of the blue. I don't know if that was NVIDIA's intention. I'm gonna safely say it probably wasn't. But now we know there's an RTX 3050 Ti, so expect that to be sold out in the next like few weeks. And yeah, there isn't too much at this Samsung event, which was kind of surprising. Honestly speaking, I think they just, and also, can I just say, Samsung's events are, they're kind of cringy, I gotta be honest. Like, COVID happened and every event had to go online, and I feel like there were companies that succeeded in transitioning, and there were companies that weren't. Samsung was one of the companies that did not transition very well. But, you know. So, I mean, there's not too much more to talk about that. We can go on to, actually, this happened today. SpaceX, they just had their Dragon Crew pod land in the Gulf of Mexico, bringing some astronauts back down from the International Space Station. So, that was really cool. There isn't really too much to say here. I mean, SpaceX has been on a roll the last few months. I can't think. Like, the Starship has been, I think, the one that's been exploding a lot. But to be fair, like, honestly speaking, they've been advancing it far more than I think anyone could have ever expected. But I don't really have too much more to say on that one. I don't know if you have anything else you wanted to say about
No,
that.
not really. I don't keep too close of an eye on SpaceX either.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. We also had the NASA have a helicopter go across Mars and take pictures. I mean, not I shouldn't say go across Mars. It took off from the ground on Mars using helicopter blades.
Yeah.
That was really cool to see. But you know, I wish I could talk more about it and give you guys more depth. I am not at all. I don't think Patrick or I like neither of us are qualified to explain it, but it looks really cool. If you haven't seen it, we'll put a link in the description to go watch the NASA helicopter go take off into space. Well, into Mars, I guess, not space. It is in space, though, technically. But let's move on to the courtroom. Okay, so they're all monopolies being sued. So Epic versus Apple. If you haven't heard this, it's been the, probably outside of COVID, one of the biggest news stories. Epic is suing Apple for monopolistic behavior and because Fortnite's not on the App Store anymore. Oh, also they can't have their own payment processor, but I think everyone like forgot about that honestly. So all right. To give you background context you haven't been keeping up, basically Epic Games has this giant game called Fortnite and Apple, so the way the Apple App Store works and the Google Play Store for the matter is they both charge a certain percentage for apps that are on their store. So if you buy the app on the store, or if you buy in-game thing or in-app things on the store, you get charged a certain percentage per purchase. And Epic is a billion-dollar company. They want all the money. And to be clear, smaller developers get hurt by this a lot more than Epic does. Don't get me wrong. Epic losing that amount of money is still not small. I think it's something like $300 million loss. But they wanted to use their own payment processor so they didn't have to pay Apple. And Apple takes like 30% of Fortnite, for example. So this lawsuit is basically Epic saying, well, you can't force us to use your payment processor. You're, you know, being monopolistic with your platform. And that court case is actually going to start on Monday or tomorrow for us, but Monday for you, whoever's listening. So with that in mind, I mean, okay. I'm gonna say it straight off the bat. I don't think Epic's gonna win this case. Because they did technically break contract with Apple, right? But I do think there is implications here that could actually force Apple to open up payment processing to, you know, vendors to use their own processes. All right, just so Patrick, first question. What do you think of allowing third-party payment processing on app stores?
I mean, it's a little sus, but it makes sense. Like, it definitely leaves the end consumer open to being attacked? Attacked isn't the right word, but, like, you can be taken advantage of by, like, a faulty system versus having only the first-party system of payment. It's kind of hard for you to get scammed, I guess, or to be hacked mid-transaction or whatever, right? Since
theoretically,
it's one unified system versus many individual. So it'll be a lot more secure, especially if it's owned by a big company like the monopolies. So that's why I said it's a little sus, but it would work out better for the smaller developers if you can have third-party systems implemented, like, reasonably. And, I mean, yeah, it does kind of suck for the wherever's hosting the game, but, like, they're also making money off of ads and stuff that they're running in games and stuff, too, right? There's, like, a shared profit thing there. Although I'm not sure if that would apply if you have third-party transactions, right?
Ooh, that's a tough one. So for things like ads, I actually am not sure. So, like, for example, if you made a couple $100 off of an ad you have on your app, I actually don't know what Apple or Google's policy is, for the matter, on that. I do think... So, what's interesting about that is with iOS 14.5, theoretically those ads couldn't track you cross-platform either anymore. So I don't know how that would affect that revenue model either.
Mm-hmm.
That actually kind of makes sense. So if Apple's trying to consolidate everything to App Store, like, you have to buy things via App Store to make a significant profit. And then Apple takes the cut of that.
Mm.
So I don't... So it's interesting. I don't want to say I'm on one side or the other. I actually get both sides of the argument here. I do think there should be a little bit more openness to the payment processing on Apple's side. Whether or not that means opening up to third-party vendors, you know, query that for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I do think there should be... Like, you shouldn't have... Okay, put it like this. You shouldn't have to pay 15 or 30% of your profits to Apple with no negotiation. I don't think that's... And to be clear, 30% is not Apple exclusive. I actually can't think of a single other platform that is 30%, that isn't 30%. I think the one example I can think of is the Epic Games Store at 12%. But Epic Games also has Fortnite. So... You know, they're making money off of their game, and their store is sort of the I'm going to call it the side. It's their, you know, their side product, in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is 30% the right number? I don't know. That's you know, that's not a question I can answer. Is 15% the right number? I couldn't tell you. Is 12% the right number? I don't know. And I think this is one of those things that is going to take... time, especially since all the players in this space right now are so solidified in their positions. Think about it. We have Steam, we've got Apple, we've got Google, I'm trying to think, what are some other companies that have, like, an app store like this?
I don't know.
I mean, they all... Yeah, I'm just going to use those three as an example. They all use a 30% model, and there really is no alternative. I talked to Louis about this. I don't know if I'd want an Epic Game Store app on any of my phones, whether it be Android or Apple. Like, would you want an Epic Game Store, let's call it the Epic Games App Store? Would you want that on your phone?
No, not really. But that's because I don't really want any of the apps that they would have on there.
Like, let's say Epic Games, like on Windows PC, they have a lot of exclusives, right? That are on Steam right now. If Epic Games came to, you know, mobile, they came to iOS and Android and they said, here's our app store. We have a bunch of exclusive apps that you can only get on Epic Game Store. How would you feel about that?
I mean, it wouldn't be much different than what it's currently like. It would just be very weird since there'd be two main stores on the Apple, right? On the iPhones. I'm not sure how I would feel. Maybe just confused. Like, why would you not just go through the Apple App Store unless you're just really trying to avoid taking that hit from the Apple tax, is what I'm going to call it. You know, the amount that Apple takes away from purchases.
Like, I guess that's sort of the question. Like, if you're a normal consumer, like, on Android, you can actually install other app stores. There's F-Droid, there's, I'm not going to remember the name of it right now. There's F-Droid and there's one other one. I can't remember what the other one's called. I can't remember what it's called. Doesn't really matter. The point being, there's at least two other app store alternatives on Android.
Yeah.
And I don't know a single person who isn't super tech savvy. Even people that are super tech savvy. I actually don't know almost anyone who uses those alternative app stores as their main app store rather than the Play Store.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's because there's the Play Store's offerings are just that much better because everything's on it. You know?
And I think the other side of it is, too, like, Apple sort of, they only have their app store on the iOS. And Android technically has it open to all these other app stores. But I can't imagine a normal consumer, you know, making the choice to go out and install it a different way. Actually, a great example, Fortnite on Android, for example, for, I think, 6 months, was not on the Play Store. And they were like, oh, go to our site and you can install it as an APK file. And then immediately it was loaded up with malware. And, you know, all these other alternative sites popped up that had malware-loaded versions of Fortnite to download as an APK to your Android phone.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the thing is, I'm not against Apple or Android, for the matter, having their specific app stores. And in fact, I actually think it's better than if we had, like, three different app stores.
Like, yeah.
That is an issue with desktop. Is you have so many different places to download from. It's part of the reason for years Apple could make the claim Macs don't get viruses. Because you couldn't install anything on it. Just to be very clear.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's better or not, you know, that's up to the individual user. And I'm of the mindset, I think maybe the option should be there, but I also don't think many people are going to use it. Like, I consider myself a pretty tech-savvy person. I don't know if I'd go out of my way to install something like the Epic Games App Store, or like if Steam released an app store, the Steam App Store. I don't know if I'd ever go out of my way to do that.
Yeah, no, I don't know why you'd do that either.
Like, I think I have Epic Games because they give out free games right now.
Yeah. That's basically it.
And one of our other co-hosts, Robert, actually hates the Epic Games store.
Yeah.
Because it divides up, you know, his two app stores, and there's not really a way to make them work with each other. So, to be clear, competition is good, but it's also, like, kind of annoying to consumers in a way. We'll see how it goes, though. It's starting tomorrow, so whatever comes out of it, you know. We'll see how it goes, and then we'll see what comes out of it. I'm curious what the end is going to be. I do think Epic Games is going to lose it on the basis of they broke contract with Apple, but the implication is, theoretically, a judge could rule that Apple does have to change something as part of the case, and that'll be really interesting to pay attention to. Same with Google, but like, anyone else notice that nobody talks about Epic versus Google? That's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to something I think that's just going to be... All right. So let's talk about Basecamp. Or Hey, I think they're called Hey.com is their company name. So, if you don't know what Basecamp is, it's kind of like a project management system. It's sort of similar to Trello or Asuna or Monday.com, or I would say it's the closest, alternative things. So, Basecamp's management recently put out a letter called Changes at Basecamp. Why would this be a big thing? Well, Basecamp has decided to ban political speech within the company, or offensive speech is how they refer to it as. Which, on the surface, sounds fine. Sounds good, actually, right? I think, Patrick, do you agree that maybe that's not a bad idea?
Like, with how politics are nowadays, like, it does kind of make sense to limit that. And also, like, really offensive speech, obviously. That one makes a lot more sense than political. Because, like, I guess, like, I can see where they're coming from. I don't necessarily agree with the banning of political talk, but, like, I can definitely see what angle they're coming from, since like there's such a massive divide between American politics right now. It's not gonna help with like team meetings and stuff.
So, I'm in agreement with you said with what you said there. I don't disagree with any of it. Now, that's sort of your take and my take on what we consider political speech and even offensive speech. Now, Basecamp's perspective on it, though, this is a little bit more interesting. Let's call it to be nice, let's call it. So, Basecamp sort of decided instead of what we consider political speech, they're gonna basically disband committees. So what Basecamp had were basically called committees. They were sort of this grouping, not grouping, what do you call it? It was sort of this, I guess I call it like a council of employees that could all meet up and they could all have meetings and make decisions in the company to help steer the company. If employees feel this decision is better, they could actually have input with management. Basecamp has decided they're not going to do that anymore. They've just decided that's not going to be a thing that they should do. So they're not doing that anymore. They've also decided to completely ban societal and political discussions on their company Basecamp accounts. So that one, okay. Now, as Patrick and I were saying, it's not inherently bad. And if your organization uses something like Teams or Google Chat, I think is what it's called now, or if you use Trello or Asana or any of those other ones that have that sort of thing, your company might have some restrictions on what you can talk about using your company resources, right? I do think, however, like entirely banning it is a little. I don't want to say it's too much. It's hard to say. I don't know how the inside of Basecamp was running. It does seem a little heavy-handed, though, I think is the best way
Oh
to
yeah,
put
for
it.
sure.
And what they've basically decided to do is instead of letting employees make decisions about the company, everything now goes to the top management now. Your CEO, your CTO, your CFO, like only those people, and CEO, like only those people seem to have say in decisions anymore. Okay. I don't know. Here's the thing. And I obviously, we don't run a company here. There's four of us. But it's not like, Lee or I make a decision and then we don't talk to Patrick or Robert about it.
Right.
And if we do make a decision, we sort of, that's a conversation that does actually come up and we actually talk about it. And a lot of times, honestly speaking, I think we've more or less had a lot of good like conversation and debates on certain things when we have talks with everyone here. I can't imagine a company, and Basecamp is a smaller company. At the time there were only 57 employees at the company. Imagine if all of a sudden one day they just told you, we're gonna go this direction, and there's nothing you can say about it. There's no conversation, there's no nothing to bring up, it's just made. And there's nothing to talk about. Just imagine that. Even a company as big as Facebook or Apple, don't get me wrong, their management makes decisions a lot of times without the their employees having any feedback into it initially. But then when a decision is made, oftentimes you'll see a group of employees make a big fuss about it, and then things change. I mean, take Google. Google had Project Dragonfly, which was going to be Google search for China. It was going to be heavily censored and, you know, all that sort of thing. A bunch of employees said, we're not going to do this. We don't want to do this. And Google went back on it. And imagine not having any say at all, though, in the decision making. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I don't understand why this was the direction they took. It's a little... It's heavy-handed. That is the best way to put it, honestly. I mean, it's gotten a lot of news coverage. A lot of employees have left the company. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I really just think it's just that they went too hard on it. Like, I guess I do understand, like, peer reviewing is not the easiest thing to have set up very well, because a lot of the time they're your peers, and so you're not gonna be super harsh on them, right? But at the same time, it's super crucial that that happens, because if you're the CEO, CFO, you're not really gonna know how to be like, yeah, you need to do this better, that better. It's the peers that are gonna know, right? So I guess it makes sense that a lot of people are leaving, because if they wanted to get like feedback on their work or anything, or if they wanted to know anything, they kind of just lost that ability to, since everything's just being directed through the CEO, CFO.
I mean, what's crazy is they even said if anyone doesn't agree with them, they would offer them a generous severance package to like get out, wow, basically. That's, I don't even know how to approach that one. Like, their entire iOS team left for their app development. This is one of those things to me, and to be clear, these guys have been known to write books about leadership and management. And like, they're not just like, you know, some off the shelf books. They're considered some of the best leadership books to read. And I don't know if that's, maybe it was them not taking their own advice type thing, or maybe it is just they don't know how to manage things. Like, and to be clear, I don't want to be in their position of having to manage that amount of people. That's a lot of people to manage. But at the same time, if you are in that position, I think a little tactfulness goes a long way. Yeah. Right?
It's just a little frustrating, I guess. Yeah.
So this is kind of an interesting story. It's still going. As of Friday, 18 employees left, and I imagine we might see a few more by the end of next week too, which it's just kind of sad to watch, honestly, because I think Basecamp as a product is actually not a bad product. It's actually a pretty good one. Clearly, you know, the mindset is a little bit different from the, you know, the employees versus the management, though, which sucks. But we'll see how that works out. And I think our last topic of the day as we approach the end here, we haven't really talked about Google today, but let's talk about Google. I mean, specifically YouTube. So Roku and Google are kind of mad at each other. YouTube TV isn't on Roku, which, if you didn't know, Roku is the dominant streaming platform in the US and most of the world, which is kind of crazy. And why I say it's crazy is they can actually take YouTube TV off of Roku and I think actually they're going to win that fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'll give a little bit of background context, and I'm curious what you think of it, Patrick. So the reason that YouTube TV is not on the Roku anymore is because, from what Roku said, Google/YouTube, depending on which part of the company you consider made this decision, wanted two things. They wanted They wanted advertising data from Roku, which Roku doesn't share. They actually have their own stream of advertising stuff. That's how they make their money. They don't actually make money on the devices. It's mostly advertising. And I guess Google wanted a bigger cut of it. They wanted more control over that aspect of it. Roku said no, for obvious reasons. And basically they told Google, if you don't renew this, we're just going to take your app off. And Google... Now, Google says they just wanted to renew the same thing. They wanted the same contract they had before and all that. That's what Google says. But Roku says, you know, well, Google's trying to strong arm us. So, I think this is kind of a funny story. Patrick, give me the instant opinion you have.
I mean, in my personal opinion, I don't see why YouTube is super mad about YouTube TV getting taken off of Roku, other than the opportunity was there. But if we're being real for a second, does anyone actually use YouTube TV? Because people use YouTube, but YouTube's TV specifically, I don't think I know a single person who uses them.
And you know, okay, and for anyone who doesn't know, the distinction is YouTube is sort of YouTube videos, as you probably watch every day. YouTube TV is actually, I'll call it a cable cutting subscription. You can watch like TV shows and sports games on YouTube TV. Yeah, it is kind of funny to me. So it's in a weird way, it's $2 billion couple. I say billion. I guess Google's technically trillion, but let's just call them billion in this case. It's $2 billion companies trying to strong arm each other. I do find it kind of funny. I actually think, even though Google's by far the more influential and the more, you know, financially wealthy company, I actually think Roku's going to win this fight. Because for as much as, you know, Patrick and I are saying YouTube TV isn't really used by anyone, you know what all else is also, I actually don't see that much of? I really don't see that many Chromecasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see Fire TV sticks, I see Rokus, I'll even see Apple TVs occasionally. I actually don't see that many Chromecasts around the block, though.
That's also very true.
So, I'm almost of this opinion. I think, at the end of the day, I think Roku's just going to win this off the sheer thing of nobody actually has Chromecast. And we're at the point now where if the majority of people even have, like, a TV, it's a smart TV. And it probably has Roku. Or Fire OS. Or the Samsung call it Tizen. Is that what they call their smart TV OS?
Hmm. Yeah.
Something like that. So, you know, I think Google's sort of in a weird place here. I think slowly as, you know, iOS 14.5 and privacy things become the forefront, I think Google's slowly realizing sort of its loss of control of advertising stuff. I mean, we just saw, something we didn't talk about this week is Google Flock, which, if you don't know what that is, it's basically they're going to kill advertising for everyone except Google. A surprise to, I don't know, anybody who hasn't been paying too much attention to advertising and how that's going for everybody, Facebook putting ads out. So I think it is interesting to see Roku and YouTube TV just go head to head and see who comes out on top. I think it'll be fun, though. It's fun to watch billion-dollar companies fight each other, but I think at the end of the day, the only people that lose in this, again, are consumers, people who actually do use YouTube TV.
Which
sucks. But, you know, the hope is maybe one day we can see... No, I'm just kidding. I was going to say maybe we can see everyone just play nicely and we all have one universal app that everyone just uses, but I'm just kidding. That's not a thing that anyone's expecting. What's funny is, I will point out, you know the one company we haven't seen anybody get into a fight with over, like, streaming stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Apple. We have yet to see YouTube TV or HBO or anybody not be on Apple TV. Because I think for better or worse, Apple isn't in advertising. So if you want, I will say one thing. If you want consistent streaming services that don't disappear because companies get into fights, just get an Apple TV.
Easy.
There you go. You know, I think it's like $59 later. So, anyways, that's the end of this episode. It was a lot of billion-dollar companies fighting each other because, you know, everyone enjoys that. Everyone has fun with billion-dollar companies fighting each other, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go ahead and we'll see you, I don't know, 2 weeks from now. Honestly, whenever the next episode gets posted. This episode will get posted this week at some point, so expect that. Subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Apple Podcasts just broke all the podcasts, so hurrah. Everyone, have fun with that. Like, it reset all of your episodes. So if you've been listening consistently, thank you. And also, I feel bad. The only good news is we only have, like, I think it's 40 episodes. So you only have to mark, 39 episodes as played instead of thousands or hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Apple Podcasts break everything. Can I just say that is the can I also just say, I'll take a second here. Apple Podcast is not a good app. It is maybe the worst Apple app that exists from Apple is the podcast app. Like, say what you will about the Spotify podcast stuff, which is also pretty bad. Apple's is just worse. Anyways, I just wanted to say that because I'm irritated right now. But yeah. So we will see you guys whenever the next episode gets posted. Subscribe. Follow us on social media. I don't know. YouTube. I think we have a Twitch channel now. I don't know where that's going at all. Yeah. So Twitch is maybe going to be around when this episode comes out. If it is, it'll be in the description below. Actually, just go to the description for everything. I'll just link everything for you. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. If your podcast platform supports it, give us a like. Give us rating. That's the same thing. Wait, no, it isn't. Rating and likes are different. Comment. It's the longest intro. We'll see you guys whenever the next episode comes out.
Bye.
Bye.